This is The Guardian.
Today, as the long nights draw in, what can the UK expect from another COVID Christmas?
We'll move away from legal restrictions and allow people to make their own informed decisions about how to manage the virus.
In England, there would be no rules requiring masks, social distancing, ventilation in schools, or vaccine passes for restaurants. Instead, the emphasis was on the UK's vaccine rollout, on personal responsibility, on accepting that we must learn to live with the virus.
When Boris Johnson lifted COVID restrictions in July this year, the prospect of winter and the troubles it might bring were a very long way off. But as our days get shorter and we huddle together indoors, there's no escaping how much more quickly the virus spreads.
I'm seeing the storm clouds gathering over parts of the European continent.
The last few weeks have seen a wave of COVID cases sweep across Europe, and that has meant ballooning hospitalisation numbers, new social restrictions, and alarming peaks in infection rates.
And we remember what happens when a wave starts rolling in.
We could see another 500,000 COVID-19 deaths in Europe and Central Asia by the 1st of February next year.
The only thing we can say with any certainty is that this winter is going to be tough.
The good news is that coronavirus isn't as dangerous as it used to be. But the number of weekly cases looks like it's trending upwards again, with 270,000 in the last 7 days, up 36,000 on the week before.
We don't yet know the extent to which this new wave will wash up on our shores.
And everybody remembers how badly things went last Christmas.
But an apology makes no difference. 181 families have been bereaved in the last 24 hours.
So what does that lesson and the situation in Europe tell us about what might happen next?
This is the moment to get your booster.
From The Guardian, I'm Nosheen Iqbal. Today in Focus, Britain braces for another coronavirus winter. Ian Sample, you're The Guardian science editor. And while plenty of people might have drifted off and stopped paying close attention to coronavirus recently, it's your job to stay on top of what's going on. So let's start with the big picture. As we head into the winter and all of the increased problems that brings for the spread of the virus, what does the overall situation look like at the moment?
Well, we've had high but pretty stable cases for about 4 months now. If you look back to July, we've had about 30, 40,000 cases a day. That may be about to change as we go into winter. But at the moment so far, we're keeping hospitalizations and deaths certainly below where they were this time last winter, but not in a way that is sort of allows us to completely, well, in any way, relax, actually. This time last year, we were seeing about 320 deaths a day at the end of October, beginning of November. And obviously that was about to shoot up, but we're now about half of that for deaths. And obviously hospitalizations are lower than they were this time last year as well. And this is overwhelmingly down to vaccination.
Does that mean the link between hospitalisation and death has been permanently broken?
No, it hasn't. We're still seeing 1,000 people a day hospitalised, which is staggering. And it's as staggering that we've become used to numbers like this. This idea of breaking the link between COVID and hospitalisation and breaking the link between COVID and death is really a sort of theoretical concept that you'll find in epidemiology textbooks. But in the real world, as long as there's COVID, you will have people dying from it because you will always have some people who are vulnerable, either because they didn't get vaccinated or because their immunity has waned or just that they didn't produce a good response to the vaccine. So it's just that it will happen to a far less extent than it would have done if you hadn't had the vaccines.
Can you give me an insight into the infection rates now compared to the numbers at the peak of the pandemic?
So if you look back to where we were early January, the most devastating wave of COVID we've had in the UK, we were getting nearly 70,000 new cases of COVID a day. Now we're around the 40,000 mark. So we're not that shy of the peak number of cases we saw in this country. But obviously the impact of those cases is now much reduced. So even though we're getting a lot of infections, a lot of that, it's not causing the disease it was. And a lot of it isn't in the most vulnerable people.
At the start of this week, Boris Johnson held one of his coronavirus press conferences. And in it, he and Chris Whitty seemed quite worried about where we're headed. They talked about 16 and 17-year-olds who are being urged to get the second jab. They talked about people over 40 who need to get boosters. We also heard that the waiting period for booster jabs would be coming down to 5 months. Did anything you heard there make you more concerned about the direction we're headed in?
What I thought was interesting about that press conference was the emphasis that Chris Whitty put on what we've seen happening in Europe. We've seen huge rises of COVID in Eastern Europe. Some of those countries have gone back into lockdown. We've seen all sorts of problems with the healthcare services in places like Latvia, Estonia, so on. That has moved westwards to Western Europe. And now we're seeing Germany, Austria, other countries in real trouble. Germany seeing record cases. We've had the WHO warn this month that the continent could see 500,000 more deaths by February if they carry on. And I think there are reasons to absolutely pay attention to what is going on in Western Europe, look at what is the same there and try and get a sense of what we may be facing in the 2 to 3 months ahead. But also be aware of how things are different here, what we've been through, the vaccination program and all sorts of things that we're doing, which may hopefully make things less awful here than they could be in some of those countries that we're seeing in Europe.
We will look at Europe in more detail in a minute, but I just wanted to focus more closely on vaccines. I mean, the Prime Minister was at one point boasting that we were world leaders in being jabbed, but he doesn't seem to be saying that so much anymore. Has the government dropped the ball? Have we stalled in our uptake?
We have. There's no doubt about it. I mean, we were very quick out of the blocks on vaccination. We got a lot of jabs into the most vulnerable very early on. That has had a huge effect. But when you get into the younger age groups, I mean, the uptake has really dropped off. You're talking about less than 80% uptake for 40 to 50-year-olds. When you get to look at the under 35s, it's 60% at best, often a lot lower as you go down the age groups. And so there's a lot of people in this country who are eligible for vaccine who aren't vaccinated.
Why aren't young people in the UK taking up the offer of a vaccine? And how much are they, and even younger school children, still a major source of the spread of the virus?
We didn't really push on vaccines for younger people through the summer. There wasn't like anything like the urgency or the incentives. And I think a lot of the time you had people who didn't think they really needed the vaccine or didn't want to get the vaccine because they said, well, I've already had the virus and I'll be protected. So you had what everyone expected, which was a big epidemic in those secondary school kids, particularly, but also primary school children. And, you know, it reached up to 10% in some age groups in secondary schools. And this happened week after week. We've started seeing those cases come down now. And there are certainly some scientists who think that the cases have now come down quite substantially in the secondary school children, perhaps because they've just topped out. They've actually had so much infection among those people that the virus is kind of starting to run out of children to infect.
Okay, so that's vaccines. But let's take a look at the other measures, such as social distancing or mask wearing, because we've all noticed a drop-off in these since the summer, and Boris Johnson was recently asked about why he isn't wearing a mask consistently. And he said he'd been doing more so in recent weeks as COVID cases have gone up. But is there an expectation that the government could upgrade their advice on public health, turning to the so-called Plan B in the near future?
I do think there's a chance that we'll move to the Plan B idea and sort of suite of measures. And I think the recent press conference the PM gave with Chris Whitty and Patrick Vallance was a little bit to frame that decision coming, or at least to send a sort of a warning shot across our bows that that's sort of something they have in their back pocket. Certainly, you know, the British Medical Association called in October for Plan B to be introduced. And there are a lot of scientists who say, why would we wait for cases to suddenly start tearing upwards? We're not in a brilliant position over here, vaccine-wise, so it makes sense to me for the scientists to argue that we should be doing a lot more of this Plan B stuff, working from home, wearing masks and the passports if necessary.
The last devastating spike in the UK was caused by the Delta variant, and that is now the dominant strain here and worldwide. But there is also this new strain, isn't there? The very snappily titled AY4.2, more ominously known as Delta Plus. How worried should we be about that, and how quickly is it spreading?
AY4.2 seems to be maybe about 10% more transmissible than Delta. Now, if you think back to when Delta came along, Delta was, you know, probably twice as transmissible as the Alpha variant that first cropped up in Kent. And Alpha was obviously way more transmissible than the original virus that we had in the spring of last year. So the incremental difference that will be caused by this new variant, the AY4.2, is probably not going to be a massive deal, to be honest. Certainly something we need to keep an eye on to see whether it does start taking off in particular age groups or does start showing obvious signs of evading vaccine protection or natural immunity after infection. But at the moment, it's not something that I'm super worried about, anything like on the level as when Delta came along.
That's reassuring. And it is not often we hear anything that's reassuring when it's connected to COVID. So I'm taking that as a plus. Ian, you said where we are with the UK, but earlier on, you also mentioned the big increase in COVID cases across the continent. Both Austria and the Netherlands have imposed new lockdowns. Hospital admissions are up 30% on a weekly basis in Belgium. Whilst in France, cases jumped by 40% last week, and Germany saw record numbers of new infections since the start of the pandemic. Things are looking pretty frightening across the channel, aren't they?
They're not looking good. And the World Health Organization called it very frankly. They said, look, Europe is now the epicenter of this pandemic. And they're right. Europe is seeing a big surge. The steepness of the curves, of the rise in cases, brings back that horrible feeling from December last year when we saw cases going up here. The sharpness of the rise is just brutal. Germany's cases, you know, they've hit record highs for the pandemic in recent weeks. They've got about 70% of their population vaccinated. So we actually have vaccinated less of our population than Germany. That has to be a worry. I mean, this isn't a country you can dismiss as not being on top of things. It feels quite foolish to me to ignore what's happening over there and not think, okay, look, let's not pretend we know everything about this virus. It's wrong-footed us many times before. We cannot assume that because of X, Y, and Z, things are going to be fine over the next few months here.
Why do you think it's hitting Europe so hard now and that we're not yet seeing a similar spike in cases here?
One of the reasons is that in the UK, we had Delta pretty early and it's been dominant here for a long time. It actually hit Europe a bit later. So they are still dealing with Delta's arrival, if you like. But there's something else which is kind of interesting that's happened is, if you look at Germany, okay, you know, we have a similar proportion of our populations vaccinated. Both countries, UK and Germany, have had pretty stable cases for the past 4 months or so. But if you look at Germany, the actual case numbers were about a tenth of ours. They were seeing something like 4,000 cases a day, maybe lower, where we were in the 25, 30, 40, up to 50, nearly 1,000 cases a day, which is dreadful. But what that's done is that's left a lot of people immunized. Germany just didn't have that background of high level of natural infection swirling around, whereas we have had that week after week, month after month, and we've had a pretty rapid booster rollout. So I think there are good reasons to think we won't see as big issues as we may see on the continent, but how bad it gets and whether we can do it with vaccines alone, I think that's a risky assumption.
So what does that mean? Are we ahead of the curve or are we behind it?
I think we are ahead of the curve. Something I think we need to be mindful of, which comes back to the press conference that we heard earlier in the week, was that we've seen this wave in Eastern Europe, we've seen it now hit Western Europe, and Chris Whitty said, look, part of this might be a seasonal effect with the cold weather coming in and winter lies ahead of us. We're going to see cases go up, and as they go up, we'll see hospitalizations and deaths go up. So I think it really is a race to crack through vaccines as fast as we can. We've left it late with the young people. We've left it pretty late with the boosters as well, to be honest. You know, the under 50, a lot of people in their 40s end up in hospital, and they will be seeing waning immunity come January, February, when we're in winter proper. And that was when we saw our peak last year. I don't think it will be as bad as the winter we came through, because, you know, we went through December and January before we pulled the lockdown in. We went through that without vaccination. So I don't think things will be as bad, but I'm not relishing the next few months, put it like that.
That's a somewhat sobering analysis. But one real bright spot on the horizon this winter is the prospect of new COVID treatments. Ian, what are they and how do they work?
This is really interesting. And I think it's up for grabs how big a deal they will be. But I think, you know, there are some good reasons to be optimistic. One company, Merck, has got an antiviral called molnupiravir. That's been approved by the MHRA over here, the UK regulator. They were the first country to do it. And this will be the first oral antiviral pill. So the beauty of that is that you can give it to people at home to prevent them getting hospitalized. And there's another drug made by Pfizer. It's called Paxlovid, not approved by the US FDA yet. It's not approved by MHRA yet. The data hasn't gone to those regulators yet. But in trials, both of these drugs look good. I mean, molnupiravir was halving hospitalizations. Paxlovid from Pfizer in the trials was reducing hospitalizations by nearly 90%, 89%. So these look on paper to be extremely positive and extremely encouraging. Molnupiravir is a really interesting drug. And what it does is it actually causes huge numbers of mutations in the COVID virus. So it eventually mutates itself to pieces into a form that just can't spread anymore. The Pfizer drug, Paxlovid, is actually a more conventional type of drug. It's given with a drug called ritonavir, which is an existing HIV treatment. But Paxlovid itself affects an enzyme that the virus needs to replicate. But both of them have the same sort of ultimate effect, which is just to shut down replication of the virus. Okay, and you can think that if you're an old or vulnerable person, you get a test, it says, yes, you've got COVID, and you immediately get onto a course of those oral pills. You can have those, you know, over a 5-day course at home. And that seems to be when they're most effective.
Prime Minister, can you categorically rule out a Christmas lockdown? And how dependent is that on booster jabs?
We don't see anything in the data that says we have to go now to plan B.
Trying to half close restaurants, pubs and nightclubs during December and ruin everyone's Christmas to save Christmas. Let's face it, most of us probably prefer the office party to Christmas itself.
Coming up, is it realistic to expect COVID restrictions this Christmas? So it's important to say that there is a sweet spot, it appears, for when a patient should take these pills in order for them to be as effective as possible. Do you expect the treatments to be in place for this winter?
We, in the UK here, have an order for the Merck pill, the one that's been approved, the molnupiravir. That is due potentially as early as this month. So the idea is, you know, we can be administering that through December, January, February. The second drug, Paxlovid, it very much depends on the clinical trial data and it depends on the MHRA, but the supplies of those are not due to arrive until late January, early February. So it may be that the Pfizer drug misses the winter for us. But molnupiravir is certainly something that hospitals are expecting to have access to this winter. And it will really be for those people who are most likely to be hospitalized and therefore to be most at risk of dying. What we haven't seen is the clinical trial data, which say, actually, this drug works really well if you get it 5 days after symptoms. It may be that actually the effectiveness of the drugs drops off quite a lot, depending on whether you get it on day one or two compared to day five. So they're brilliant drugs. They look really interesting. But how effective they're going to be, I think we still an open question.
So, Ian, you've told us about this latest surge in Europe, but you've also said that booster jabs are going to be rolled out in the UK in larger numbers down the age groups. And now there are some potentially revolutionary treatments not far away. And for Britain, at least, some of that sounds like pretty good news. I mean, lots of people were gutted when Boris Johnson effectively cancelled Christmas last year. Now, 5 weeks out, do you feel reasonably confident that we're going to escape that happening again?
It's such a hard question to answer. The fact of the matter is, I don't know. And the more depressing thing is, no one knows. And the science and the medicine is uncertain enough, but now you're putting politics on top of it, which means everything's up for grabs. This government doesn't have a history through this pandemic of acting fast. It always seems to wait to the last minute, even if it's had advice good while beforehand not to do that. So it's really hard for me to feel confident that we will act early and lightly to try and avoid some of this stuff. I think it's certainly a possibility that we'll have some kind of lockdown, but I think that would depend on cases getting really high.
So that's discussing the government's approach, but I'm also, Ian, I'm wondering about your personal one, because I know you're a party animal. Will you be accepting Christmas party invites this year?
All of them. I will. You know, I've had my two shots and I miss people. And, you know, I've just organised a pub crawl for December that is going to be with some people I haven't seen in a long time. And I'm really looking forward to it. It's like the highlight of my calendar for the rest of the year. We're all going to be as jabbed as we can be. And we're, I would like to think, reasonably scientific and reasonably sensible. But, you know, who knows? We will do our best. And it's not like, you know, we're not going to end up at Fabric or anything like that. You know, I may well turn up at some of these things and take one look at the place and turn around and go back out. And it will depend on the event and I guess how important it is to me. But I'm certainly not going to rule them out. No way.
OK, so if we're trying to figure out what's going on over the next few weeks, what are the really key indicators that we should be keeping an eye on?
I mean, even though we've talked a lot about how the link between cases and hospitalizations and deaths is weakened, and obviously it has, they're still our prime indicator. They're still the first thing that you see move when worse is coming down the line. So it's that. It's watching the cases. And the problem is cases have been going up and down a bit for the last 4 months. And you can end up becoming a bit obsessive, like watching every day's figures and reading too much into these things, which is, it's natural to stare at them. But, you know, we have to see. I mean, late December, January is going to be a key time. And I'm slightly confident, you know, but I think I'm sort of subconsciously comparing it back to winter last year. But to say things will be better than winter last year is hardly a great thing. I mean, winter last year was absolutely brutal and we had an awful lot of deaths. You know, it was horrific. And, you know, more people died then than at any time in the pandemic until that point. So I'm just hoping they don't start shooting up. And we could see that in a couple of weeks if it's going to happen.
So it sounds like quite a difficult situation to read. And I suppose my next question is going to be equally challenging. But what stage of the pandemic would you say that we're in? We've read reports that British officials are compiling a COVID exit strategy called Operation Rampdown, which is expected to start in April. Is that a realistic timeframe in which to think the pandemic will be over?
Okay, calling the pandemic over, that can mean a lot of different things. First of all, pandemic, you know, really means global. And so the pandemic won't be over. COVID won't be over for the world. And it won't be over for the UK. But I think by April next year, we will have been through two winters of this. A lot of people will have either had the virus or had the vaccine. We're already have antibody levels up in the 90% mark. We will have the antivirals along. We will have other things in place that we can use in hospitals. And I think it's just going to become a case of, can we keep on top of this with vaccination? Will the boosters actually, you know, will we put boosters through the whole population largely? And will that actually give us enduring high level protection? That's what I really want to see. I think the big spanner that could get thrown into the works on that is if we get a variant that escapes the vaccines, which is absolutely possible, but you would just hope that it may not be as damaging, as harmful. It's happened historically, but it doesn't mean it has to happen.
So optimism with a bit of caution. Ian Sample, thank you so much.
No problem.
That's it for today. My thanks to Ian Sample. You can read all of his and the science team's reporting on COVID and more at theguardian.com. This episode was produced by Eva Krisiak, with additional research by Georgina Quach. Sound design is by Rudy Zagadlo. The executive producers are Archie Bland and Phil Maynard. We'll be back on Monday.
This is The Guardian.